You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to he's an idiot.
Hello and welcome to episode 53 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. In today's show, we've got a Game 7, a Game 1, and some playoff series previews. So let's get right into this and talk about the Bucks-Celtics Game 7. And I want to reference myself, actually, and talk about what I said in the preview for this game. And I said how important it was that Milwaukee didn't go down early. Yeah, forget about that. But to their credit, they did claw their way back from a double-digit lead, which was predicted. But Boston responded, and they also rebuilt their lead. So it was almost predictable. It's gone the same way the series has, where a team builds an early lead, the other team battles, get back at least competitively, and put some pressure on that team that built the lead, and then but they can't reel them in. They can't get over that hump, and that's pretty much what happened in this game. Giannis was being stifled with multiple defenders, and it was clear that the Celtics were not going to let him control the game. When he picked up his third foul in the second quarter, and the Celtics had a double-digit lead, things were looking pretty bad for the Bucks. But with Giannis on the bench, that forced Milwaukee to run plays for Parker and Middleton, so they weren't reliant on the Greek Freak, which might have been the best thing. It might have given them the best opportunity to actually get back into this game the way that Giannis was actually playing. With Jaylen Brown sidelined with a bum hamstring, Milwaukee, led by Bledsoe of all people, who's had a shocking series, cut the lead to 5. Tatum and Horford carried the offensive load in response. Milwaukee was finding offense with Bledsoe and Middleton to stay with Boston, but they couldn't slow down Horford. Giannis needed to recognize that was more unacceptable than his bad offense. If his offensive game is not working, dominate in different areas, and Horford was eating them alive. So you got to think that Giannis should have been smart enough to almost be a decoy on offense, considering the amount of attention he was getting on offense, and then utilize his energy to be a dominant defender, which he is more than capable of doing so. Back-to-back threes by Morris and Tatum capped an 11-2 run, and Boston enjoyed a 16-point lead. With Giannis ineffective, Milwaukee had no real chance of mounting a comeback. Middleton and Bledsoe had some moments, but fittingly, it was Terry Rozier that sparked the Celtics as they blew the game wide open in the fourth quarter. Now, if you're a Celtics fan, this has to be somewhat bittersweet with Rozier, and allow me to explain. Because he has played so well as a starter with Kyrie Irving out, how can he go back to being a backup to Irving? There will be a huge market for him. On the other side of that, and this is not bittersweet, this is just a pure bonus, is Al Horford's leadership and overall play in this game. It was brilliant, and he sealed the game with a fading jumper. Boston advances to play the 76ers, and I do try to not be biased on this podcast, but this is something I wanted to see. I wanted so badly to see this series. We did see these two teams play in 2012, but no one took the 8-seed Philadelphia 76ers seriously. And I've talked about that before. They pretty much got lucky in that series. This isn't the Golden State Warriors or the Memphis Grizzlies making it to the second round. People are like, well, hold on a second. They nearly won 50 games. They're not really an 8-seed. We're talking about a Philly team that I think they were 500. And they went up against the number 1-seed Bulls, and Derrick Rose got injured in the first game. At the end of the first game, which was a blowout. So my point is that Philadelphia team barely got by those Bulls, even without Derrick Rose. So no one expected them to be championship contenders. So because of that, we haven't seen this kind of excitement in a playoff series between these two teams really since 2002, when it was in the first round. It was Boston versus Philadelphia. Boston was a 3-seed, Philly was a 6-seed. And Allen Iverson, this is the year after Iverson took his team to the finals. But the number 1 seed was actually the New Jersey Nets. And no one was really taking them seriously, even though they would advance. The number 2 seed was the Detroit Pistons with Ben Wallace and Jerry Stackhouse, not even Richard Hamilton. So I don't even think Chauncey Billups was on that team either. So no one was taking either of those two teams seriously. A lot of people thought the winner of that Boston versus Philly series, even though it was the first round, would advance to the NBA Finals. And that you had a great, great series. Boston won the first two, then Philly won the next two at home, and then went to a deciding game five. Remember, this is before best of seven in the first round. Deciding game five. So that was a great series. And I'm looking forward to a series with that type of competitive fire between these two teams. But the easy thing to do when you look at these rosters, and I've mentioned this in previous episodes, but you look at these rosters, and really the four most important guys, and this is all dependent on Jaylen Brown's health, but the four most important guys are Simmons, Embiid, Brown, and Tatum. And although Embiid, this is technically his, you know, he was drafted 3 years ago, but he's only his second season, and that's being generous considering the amount of games he's played. You've got Simmons, you've got all these guys, they don't have a whole lot of experience. I would argue that Jaylen Brown is the most experienced guy out of all of them. So my point is, it's easy to look at that and say, oh yeah, this is a preview for a look into the window of the future for the Eastern Conference. But no way. Absolutely not. These teams, yes, they're going to get better, but they are the right now of the Eastern Conference, especially when you look at the way that Cavs are struggling, and there's still a giant question mark over the Toronto Raptors. And yeah, they handled the pressure very well against a very good Washington team, but would we be surprised if they laid an egg against either Indiana or Cleveland in the next round? I wouldn't be surprised at all. I'm not trying to disrespect them. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised by it. So it's very possible that both of these teams, even with all the injury problems for Boston, either of them will come out of the Eastern Conference and represent the East. And if it's Philly, with the way that they're playing and the depth that they have, it wouldn't surprise me if they actually won the championship, even if they are playing Golden State or Houston. Now, a full preview of this series will be coming your way in tomorrow's episode, but I just wanted to talk about that because I wanted to talk about this series from the moment Boston won Game 5. Of course, Milwaukee won Game 6, and instead of doing the preview of, you know, I still couldn't do a preview of this series, but now I can do a preview. I wanted to get a few things off my chest, but I'll do an in-depth preview of that in tomorrow's episode. And speaking of previews, let's do the Rockets and Jazz preview, because right now we're in halftime of the Warriors and Pelicans series, game one. And I'm not sure how much time I'm going to really put into that considering the way that that's playing out. So let's have a look at the Rockets and Jazz. And obviously this series does not feature the same star power of a Rockets versus Thunder matchup. But from a basketball purist standpoint, this is even better. Because the way that the Jazz play with their team concept, and they don't get out of their roles as much, they don't implode as much. And they'll keep applying pressure to Houston. And it's going to be good basketball. It's going to be quality basketball. We're not going to get periods of great basketball and then bad basketball. We're going to get consistently good basketball. Now, Harden is a tougher cover than Westbrook. And what I mean by this is there's no question that Westbrook is a superior athlete. He's faster, he's stronger, he's more explosive. And that's not to say that Harden is none of those things. I'm just talking about a strict comparison to Russell Westbrook. I don't think there's a player in the NBA as fast or as strong or as athletic, when you combine all three of those, than him. You could maybe talk about LeBron, and that's a testament to his workout regime. But you can, apart from him, who else? Maybe Giannis? But he doesn't have the skill set either. So Westbrook is a superior athlete, but Harden is a much more consistent shooter. He's a better shooter as well. He's not just more consistent shooter. And he's a better scorer. And he plays a lot more under control. In addition to that, the Rockets have Chris Paul, who is the ultimate safety valve for when things go south for Harden. So if teams focus in on James Harden like the Minnesota Timberwolves did, you've got Chris Paul that you can run the offense through Chris Paul and use Harden as a decoy. And if they don't pay attention to him, you can start running him off the ball, running screens off him off the ball, or in secondary breakdown. So you run a screen and roll with Chris Paul, he gets into the teeth of the defense, then you kick it to Harden on the wings, the defense has already collapsed to control Chris Paul or to get the ball out of his hands. And James Harden has plenty of room to operate in those situations. More importantly, however, in terms of the differences between Houston and Oklahoma from the Jazz standpoint, is Houston has the bodies outside of Harden and Paul, so Eric Gordon, Gerald Green, Joe Johnson, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, Clint Capella, all of those guys on any given game, they can provide 15 to 20 points, and we wouldn't blink twice if we saw that. Utah did not deal with that against Golden State, against Oklahoma. You had Paul George and you had Russell Westbrook. It was very rare. I haven't gone through the stats, but it was very rare for anyone outside of those two for Oklahoma to have a double-digit performance. So that's a big difference. And another big question is Donovan Mitchell. Now, I was a fan of his during the regular season. So before even the playoffs started, I said Ben Simmons, but then I thought about it. It should be Donovan Mitchell for Rookie of the Year. So as big of a fan of his game as I was during the regular season, I've been absolutely blown away by the growth and maturity of him in the playoffs. The difference is Houston is they are not nearly as susceptible to imploding as the Thunder were. If Mitchell dominates this, and I swear to God, I'm not kidding about this. If Mitchell dominates this series and is the best player of this series like he was against Oklahoma, we can forget the Rookie of the Year conversations, and we may as well just put him in the discussion for the best player in the world. I am not kidding. If he dominates this series and Utah gets to the conference finals, there's absolutely no justification to exclude him out of that conversation. Another key for Utah is Rudy Gobert has to stay out of foul trouble. And this almost goes without saying, but I want to explain why that's so important. Houston loves to use screens and creating offense for their guards, as well as Capella, from those high screen or pick and roll situations. Now, Gobert's presence will mean that Utah doesn't have to collapse in those plays. So a lot of the times you'll see Houston, when the offense is rolling, from a screen, if they get a high screen, either that means a switch, or it means they have to flash the ball handler. So if they have to switch onto James Harden or Chris Paul, they can just go ISO with the big man. They have to either flash or jump, whatever terminology you want to use, the ball handler, which leads to usually a lob for Capella. Or you'll see the wing defenders, who are usually on the corner, guarding the corner three-point shooters, having to collapse, and that just feeds right into what Houston wants to do, which is wide-open threes. And with Gobert, he allows... It's almost like Hakeem Olajuwon, where in the mid '90s, where he's on in screen and roll situations, he can flash and contest those shots, but he's long enough to actually contest the ball handler and pressure the ball handler just enough without totally committing to the ball handler, and he can get back and recover on those lobs, and it forces them to not completely collapse in those situations. This is critical because it may force Houston into much more isolation plays than they want to. And when I'm talking about isolation, it's a big difference between if you're James Harden going ISO with if another guard who usually has good foot speed and another big man. And it doesn't put an advantage back in Utah's favor in stopping that, but they're at least a lot more competitive in those circumstances. Now, I think we can all agree that the Thunder were a more talented team than Utah. But Utah played with superior poise and maturity. It wasn't just Donovan Mitchell. All of them did. In fact, they completely dominated those facets. They can't expect to have the same level of those advantages like that against Houston. Utah is good for a couple of wins, but I think they go down in this series in six games. The future is so bright for the Jazz with Mitchell and the way they are building. And of course, their coach as well. Their coach is perfect for him. And I don't know how good Snyder is going to be. This will be a true test of Snyder too, because Snyder completely outcoached Donovan. If he can duplicate that against Mike D'Antoni, then honestly, the sky's the limit for this team. They could beat Houston. I'm just not going to pick it, because I think when you look at the teams and the talent and the veteran leadership, I think Houston just has too big of an advantage for Utah to overcome. But once they fill their roster out, remember, this is the first time they've really had obviously it's the first time they've had Mitchell, because he's a rookie. But now you've got Gobert, you've got Favors healthy, you've got Ricky Rubio there. This is the first year they've got him. Once they start filling their roster around this core, in a couple of seasons, they could be the next Houston. Because remember, it took a while for Houston to build up this team as well. So I just think the future is bright for them, but they're not going to be able to get past Houston. They will win a couple of games. Donovan Mitchell will have a couple of breakout performances, but I don't think he'll be as consistently good as what he was against Oklahoma. So Houston in six. Now let's have a look at the Warriors and Pelicans in the first half of the game one. I was going to stick around and watch the whole game, but I do have other things to do. So I'll have to catch the second half a little later this evening. But I will talk about game one, and if anything big happens in the second half of game one, obviously I'll cover it in tomorrow's episode. But the thoughts from the first half is both teams came out a little hesitant. It was almost a feeling out process. And that is to be expected for a game one when both teams have extended time off and they've got, rust doesn't always happen just because of injuries, even though they're practicing. And sometimes they're looking at each other and maybe they're countering a little bit too much. So there is a bit of a feeling out process. New Orleans did a good job of matching the Warriors early on, but they were almost baited into the Warriors' pace. And that's never a good situation unless if you're the Houston Rockets. And the Golden State Warriors blew the game open. The Pelicans seemed a bit unprepared for the increased intensity of this game, and when they tried to regather themselves, their communication was horrible. And they tried to isolate Davis on the block, but there has to be movement off the ball. We saw this in the Utah series against Oklahoma, where even when you were able to isolate Westbrook or whatever, there was just no movement. So the defense was able to focus in, the off-the-ball defenders were able to focus in and really zone up. Now, if you have more movement and activity off the ball, that doesn't allow them to focus in as much. And you really, honestly, you see this when the Warriors isolate Kevin Durant or even Steph Curry when he's healthy. And you see all the activity and ball movement, not ball movement, but all the off the ball activity and screening that happens for Klay Thompson. And that really prevents, because then, I mean, you see it also with Cleveland with Kyle Korver, and that's what opens up things for LeBron. Now, if there isn't that activity or movement, it's basically 1-on-3, 1-on-4 basketball if you put the ball on the floor. And this is a big reason why the Pelicans were unable to get anything going offensively. The Warriors went on a 24-2 run to establish a 28-point lead. And yes, I was the idiot to pick at the Pelicans prior to the series. And quite honestly, New Orleans will have to prove that they can compete on this level. Because based off the second quarter, I'm not sure if they can handle the pressure. And I'm not overreacting. I'm not saying the series is over, even if they lose this game by 35, 40 points. But what I am saying is they have to meet that challenge and meet that pressure early on. And they have to impose their will. They cannot play the pace of the Warriors because they panic. They don't have the scoring. They don't have the shooting. And it's not their style. So they need to back it up a little bit, be confident in what they're able to do, and just relax a little. If they cannot handle the pressure or the intensity, the series will be over in 5 games max, and that's being generous. Anyway, guys, thanks so much for listening. Got a bunch of questions to answer. I will answer them tomorrow's episode. I do have to get going. I will be catching the end of game one tonight. So if anything big happens, obviously I'll talk about it. I mean, it's possible. I'm not ruling it out because I'm addressing it right now, right? But thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I'm sorry for how short it is, but I'll catch you again tomorrow. Big, big game 7 tomorrow. And also, I believe we've got a game 1 of the Rockets and Jazz, so it'll be interesting how that plays out. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the games.